one of the things that probably is okay with me, and I know that we have a lot of people. My daughter-in-law is a really 90s woman, and she is absolutely terrified that she's going to do more than James does. And I know that that's the way, you know, a lot of that's the way. But I think that I'm less likely to feel that way than I see other people. So I'm not one who keeps score, and I don't think Dave is. So we haven't done a lot of scorekeeping in our relationship about you're doing more or you're doing less. It has just been that it just sort of works out that he does some areas and I do other areas. But that hasn't been a real issue in our life. So I already feel I have equality. And in case you men don't know it, women run the world anyway. You know, so what can I say? Do I really understand that my troubles are of my own making? Thanks to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 Steps, I know today that I am the creator of all my problems. And we were just talking about that. I was missing about that. It's like I used to do things knowing what Dave's reaction was going to be to those things. And I can remember Sally saying, stop doing that. You do that all the time. You take the same problem to him. You're getting the same reaction. Why don't you take a different action? So, most of the time, I know when I'm turning his crank. I just know it. And if I'm honest and own my part, our relationship works lots better. Do we express God's love in our relationship, and do we share it with others? And Dave and I are very willing to share our God and our program. We both sponsor people. We're both very active in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's just first. That's all there is. If AA demands something, that's first. My oldest son has a terrible time with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just, the other day, he and I had a conversation. He says, I think you put AA before Cheryl and me and these kids. And he says, I feel like you do. And I said, Russ, you feel that way because it's true. I said, AA and God is always first. And if you enjoy the relationship we have and the life we have, it's because of AA. And I can't do it any other way. That's just the way it is. How important is liking myself to my relationship? Do I need self-esteem and self-respect? I have come that I am a part of this relationship. This relationship is not who I am. And that has been really good. I felt like I always felt like I had to be married and all this stuff. And today I'm in this relationship because I really want to be, not because I think it's going to make me one way or another. Am I a patient and uncritical listener? Sometimes. I still can be. I can still interrupt and try to say he's feeling what he's not feeling. Can I see my partner through God's eyes or hear my partner through God's ears? And one of the things that's really true is that I really felt Dave's unconditional love to me. And through feeling that unconditional love, that love led me to the relationship I have with God today. And I'll be forever grateful for Dave. Because I felt like I was really unlovable for the actions that I had taken in early sobriety. And he loved me anyway. And that was the thing that started to lead me to the relationship I have with God today. So my partner, I saw his love for me. And because of that, I was able to see God's love for me.
Number six, a partner ought not be overly supportive spiritually, emotionally, or physically to the relationship, lest problems of ego or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. We think it's really important that we let each other go to be the very best person they can be, and that we encourage each other to follow their heart and to follow their path, wherever it leads them. And I encourage Polly to go out at all times to be the very best Polly she can be, whatever that means. And whatever that means to her. Not the very best Polly she can be, in my opinion, but whatever it means to her. And she encourages me to do the same. And once again, the biggest stumbling block to really internalizing that attitude and to really meaning that is just fear. You know, because I used to think, well, you know, if I encourage her to really follow her heart and to just go be the very best Polly she can be, whatever that means, what if she decides she's going to be a better Polly over there than here with me? See, low self-worth is a very, very damaging character defect. And alcoholics are up to their lips in low self-worth. It is very damaging. My partner does not want some guy who's going to walk around with a low opinion of himself. And, you know, she doesn't, it's not appealing to have low self-worth, and it is destructive. And low self-worth is the kind of thing that promotes the idea that if I let my mate go free, she's going to split, or something will take her away from me because I'm not worth hanging around with. There's a way to get out of that low self-worth, but it takes time. You can't just dump it. And you know, there's not a tablet to take for it. Low self-worth is a spiritual malady, and it takes a spiritual solution to fix it. And when you feel like, you know, that you're not worth anything, just try to look at what God thinks you're worth. No, you are not laying in a gutter somewhere drunk right now, and you haven't died from alcoholism. You know, it's just not true, but we believe it because of our past, and it's just a very damaging aspect of us. They used to have a little sign on the wall that said, "If you love someone very much, let them go free. If they come back, they're yours forever. If they don't, hunt them down and kill them." So, Polly and I are interested in each other's growth, but we have to allow each other the dignity to grow. You know, I can't go in and try to preempt Polly's mistakes and just babysit her. I'm not her keeper or her babysitter. She has to stumble when she has to stumble, and so do I. You know, I don't always come out of things the way I wanted to. It doesn't always look on the way out like it did going in. You know, and sometimes, you know, you get yourself into a jackpot, that, you know. But at the same time, you know, of what value is it to me if I don't have experiences that I can learn from? If Polly tries to keep me from stubbing my toe, you know, well, how am I ever going to learn how to avoid mistakes and how to not do things that are just kind of dumb? So we believe in mutual independence and to the greatest extent possible. Khalil Gibran in The Prophet wrote about marriage. He said, "Love one another, but make not a bond of love. Let it rather be a moving sea between the shores of your souls. Fill each other's cup, but drink not from one cup. Give one another of your bread, but eat not from the same loaf. Sing and dance together and be joyous, but let each one of you be alone, even as the strings of a lute are alone, though they quiver with the same music. Give your hearts, but not into each other's keeping, for only the hand of life can contain your hearts. And stand together, yet not too near together, for the pillars of the temple stand apart, and the oak and the cypress grow not in each other's shadow." So we encourage each other to be our own person. I'm very proud of Polly. I admire her. She is the kindest, most non-judgmental person I've ever known in my life. And, you know, she has her own opinion of herself, and it doesn't always square with that. But she is, because I get to live in the same house with her, and I get to hear her on the telephone in conversations with women that she sponsors and with other people. And I know what she says when she doesn't think anybody else is listening, or when she doesn't give any thought to the fact that somebody else may be listening. And And Polly said that I opened some doors for her. She has equally opened some doors for me. I've learned more from her than probably any other person on the planet in terms of love and compassion and being non-judgmental and all that. See, and all those things I used to do, the reason I know so much about fear was I was a very fearful individual. And I just, I learned not to be afraid, mostly from Polly. and I don't know of any other person, and I don't mean this to, you know, just to be a nice guy because we're here and it's a couple's retreat and she's sitting there. You know, I really don't know of any other person that I've ever learned as much from as I learned from Polly. And see, when I got here, I was too damn macho to even make a statement like that. I'm not going to tell you something like that. You know, I'm a big, tough dude, man. I'm not going to tell you that my wife is the greatest teacher I've ever had, you know, and that I admire her for what she does and for what she stands for. I was just too self-centered and too egotistical and just wasn't anything I was going to do. And I do it freely and easily now. I think, isn't that great, you know, that the person who has taught me more than anybody else also is my wife. You know, I get her every day, all day. Do I encourage and support my partner? What is motivating me when I try to be all things to my partner? Usually manipulation, you know, when I try to take care of anything. I try to figure out some way to get her to cheerfully agree to whatever I want her to do. How can I hear God's voice when I am arguing in a loud voice? Do I allow my partner the dignity to fail? Do I pretend to agree with my partner just to keep things going? Sometimes I don't necessarily pretend to agree, but sometimes I don't necessarily agree, but I don't, you know, sometimes it's just not the right time to, you know, like our son James says, you got to pick your battles. do I take responsibility for my own spiritual, emotional, and physical needs? That's pretty much true. Yeah. Am I in this relationship just to feel needed or loved? No, I was. You know, there's something I know about me. I know that I need to be married. I believe it is the natural order of things for me to have a wife. And that I have a wife that I admire and that I love, and that it is up to me to be a good husband and to make this relationship work. Because if I chuck it and run, if it gets a little salty and I get ticked off, or I let my ego get in the way or whatever, and I dump it to go to another one, guess who I'm taking with me into the other one? Me. And I gotta, sometime or other, I have to come to one of two conclusions. Either I don't want to be married at all or have any kind of decent relationship with a woman, or I need to change my ways and be the kind of person that can have a successful relationship with a woman. Running away is not going to work. If my character defects are such that I can't make my marriage work, then I have to get rid of my character defects. I got to work on those and change me so that my marriage will work. Otherwise, I'm just going to go jump in another marriage and take all those character defects with me, and I'm going to do it all over again. You know, that's the version, the definition of insanity that we in Alcoholics Anonymous know so well. Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. This time, it'll be different. And it never is. 7.
Each partner ought to strive to be fully self-supporting, spiritually, emotionally, and physically. And I think that's really important. It's just like what we were talking about, the thing that would destroy, and that's what John D. Rockefeller said, the thing that would destroy Alcoholics Anonymous is that if somebody else gave us money and tried to help us out. And I believe that being self-supporting, and I don't believe that always that means that I bring the same amount of money to the relationship that Dave does. I've been really proud of a lot of the women I sponsor today that are willing to give up some really fine careers to be full-time moms. And I think that is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I think that what's really neat is that as a family unit, they have decided to make sacrifices in order to be good parents. And I think that's wonderful. And I think the self-supporting men is that it becomes that that the wife stays home and provides what's necessary for the children, or the husband stays home and provides what's necessary so that the children can have the kind of upbringing that they need to have instead of being brought up in daycare. And I think that's really fabulous. And I think that in that sense, that's being self-supporting to the relationship, and that's saying, we've made this decision and this is what we're going to do. It's really important that Dave is not my AA sponsor, that I do not, you know, it's like a lot of times I think, especially women, and I think men tend to do it too, but I think it's more prevalent in women, we tend to put men up as gods. And as soon as we get into a relationship, it's like the relationship becomes all consuming and everything is around whatever man I'm in a relationship with. And I think that spiritually, I need to be self-supporting spiritually. I need to depend upon my AA program, my 12 steps, and my 12 traditions, and I need to work those in my life. Emotionally, I need to go what we talked about earlier. I do not need for Dave to solve all my problems emotionally. I think that I need to go take my emotional stuff to other people, talk about it, and then bring it back to the relationship. Sometimes we can talk about it, you know, right away. But I know that I tend to be much more intense and emotional than Dave does. And his instant reaction to me is to try to find a way to fix me. He doesn't know any other way to deal with me, because that's the way men are. It's a guy thing. And so I've learned these things, that I need to be responsible and accountable for my own actions and feelings. And in doing that, by being responsible and accountable, I know that I need to start to have resources in order to deal with my emotional problems, and Dave is not that resource at all times. AA sponsor, whatever. And physically, it's not Dave's responsibility to say, you better eat, you better exercise, you better do this, you better do that. I need to be responsible and accountable for my own health. And that's my business, it's not his. And I need to, what it amounts to is just what we talk about in AA. I need to take this tradition and I need to be responsible and accountable for myself. And if I do all those things, work a good AA program, talk to God, make sure I talk to my sponsor, work with others, and take care of my health, I'm going to bring the best of me to my relationship. And when I do that, Dave and I have a much, much better relationship. And I used to play these manipulative games of, you know, I wouldn't eat, or I would just work, and it's like, you know, you're supposed to see how much I'm doing so you'll see how wonderful I am. And didn't you know I starved all day and I worked so hard? And I mean, it was just all these manipulation game in order to be the martyr of the year. And they don't even work for me anymore. But those were the kind of things that I did. I love the term that attorneys use, entrapment. That's what I was always doing. I was just providing this whole little area or arena for entrapment so that you would feel sorry for me. Because I was a person who was consumed with self-pity, so I wanted all that kind of reinforcement. And, you know, today it's not, I don't even want to do that. I don't even want to go there anymore. It even makes me sick. So I can imagine how sick it made him. Do I try to be boss? Yeah, I do. And Dave is saying, are you planning my life again? Well, I'm trying to. But we've got ways that we kind of talk to each other so that I don't do that anymore. Do I attempt to assume control of my partner and our relationship? I try, but, you know, fortunately we're talking freely enough after this many years that I, you know, he usually tells me in a very loving way he doesn't want to do it. Do my needs for comfort or feeling of safety limit my partner's options? And I think that's something that was a true character defect of mine. I just had Dave so in a trap that he just had to do things for me. And I think now he feels like I'm not so fragile and he can go out and pretty much do what he wants and be able to tell me without feeling like he has to sugarcoat. Well, you know, I'd really like to go on a camping trip And, you know, I hope it's, you know, it's just all that kind of stuff. Be able to say, well, I planned a camping trip for this and so. And, you know, is there anything that would complicate that? Or is it okay, you know, are we doing anything else? And that's just what we do. I'm going to go talk at an AA conference. Does this conflict with anything else that you're doing? And if not, we're off and going. We show the courtesy to tell each other and find out what each other's schedule is. And if nothing's conflicting, then we're on our way. Do I try to manage and control through the purse strings? That one really hasn't been one of my deals, but I think that happens a lot. It's, money's always been a scary thing, but it's like I'm usually not the one with the purse string, so it's not been that much of a problem. Do I think that because something is good for me personally, that also good for my mate? And I'm way better with that. I used to think, well, I think it's such a good idea for me, it's bound to work for him too. Do I deceive myself by thinking how unselfish and giving I am when in reality I'm giving only when I can do it on my own terms? Could I remember that giving is a position of control and that receiving is a position of powerlessness? And I learned this in spades in the last 5 years. Because it's amazing when I've got the money and, you know, and I can be doing all the stuff, and whether it's in any kind of relationship, but when people had to start giving to me, I found myself in a very, very vulnerable situation. And I truly believe what Sandy Beach says, we come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and our receivers are broken. It's so wonderful when we can learn to receive. God's love comes much easier to us when we learn to receive. Do I take responsibility for my own physical needs, health, diet, and exercise? Yes, I do. Can I point to at least one thing right now that determines the degree of healthy independence that I have? And that is that one of the things that I believe that we do as a couple is that we have different interests in different areas and we respect each other, those interests, and I'm able to do my passion and Dave's able to do his. Hurry.
Our relationship should remain forever a free giving relationship, each to the other. It says in the 12 and 12, freely ye have received, freely give. If you look at the regular tradition here, it says that we do not hire professional people in Alcoholics Anonymous to conduct our business, and within the framework of our marriage, you know, I am not a professional carpenter. I'm not a plumber. Polly is not a professional housekeeper or a laundress, and so we think this particular tradition has to do with sharing some of the stuff that's not so fun in a marriage. You know, who's going to do the chores? And we have come to a point in our marriage where pretty much whatever's wrong with you, you take care of it. You know. We do not do a lot of formal things anymore. Like we do not necessarily have formal meals at night. You know, a lot of times we come in and you know, I'll have a bowl of cereal and Polly will fix herself an omelet. I mean, we're just that free and easy now in our relationship. And so it's like being in charge all the time has gotten to the point where it's really not that important to either one of us anymore. And so... if anything, just the opposite is true. Nobody in our house wants to be in charge anymore. So, you know, and in the final analysis, you know, we just have to avoid taking a professional attitude or a know-it-all attitude about anything. You know, I am not a doctor. I am not a psychotherapist. I am not any of those things. And I can't try to just force my expertise on Polly, you know, even though it is self-appointed. And so we just try to be in touch with these things and not even go there, you know, not even try to be the professional or the authority on anything. So the checklist is, do I try to sound like an expert on things? And if so, why do I need to do that? Is my security at risk? Is my fear triggered? Does my ego feel threatened? Why do I need to be an authority? Do I believe that one or the other partner should be in charge based on their gender? You know, well, yeah, I grew up believing that a lot. I was raised to think that men were the dominant force in the family. You know, they were in charge. And I've since really changed my mind, but I didn't let go of that easily or freely. You know, I mean, that was drug out of my tightly clutching hands. That was torn away from me. You know, I didn't want to give that up. Do I make an effort to understand my partner's opinions and views? And do I really listen to her and show respect for those opinions and views? Yes, I do. I do. My wife is much, you know, I look at what goes on around my house. My wife sponsors over 30 women. And I watch people who hang out with her get better. I have seen some really sick people come into her life and just hang out with her and be sponsored by her, and have seen them benefit from her love and her ability. It's just some natural ability that she has to heal people that she got in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, it just works. And so, yes, I do respect her views on things, because I have a whole wealth of evidence to see how well her approach to life works. Does my identity and feelings of self-worth depend upon my relationship with Polly? Yeah, it does to some extent, and I'm not so sure that's a bad thing. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing to me. You know, I think in terms of Polly and Dave, you know, we are a unit, and so part of my identity is tied up in that unit as to who we are. Who or what was my role model for a healthy relationship? How much time have you got? I never even was in the same county with a healthy relationship until I got married to Polly, and we began to try to change the way we approached our life to develop ideas and techniques for having a healthy relationship. I don't know if I ever saw one. I can look on both sides of my family back as far as I can remember, and I can't find one anywhere. You know? So I didn't have a role model. Do I charge my mate a fee for being in a relationship with me? Do you have to pay to be in a relationship with me? If so, what is it? What's the fee? How expensive is my love and companionship? It used to cost a lot. I hope it doesn't cost much anymore. Do I take hostages in my relationship? That's what Paul and I are always laughing about. You know, we got here, we didn't know how to have a relationship, we just knew how to take a hostage. Do I feel that my mate belongs to me? No, not at all. My mate belongs to God and to herself. Do I really understand that I will reap what I sow, that what goes around comes around? You know, that's one of the most profound things I've ever heard in Alcoholics Anonymous. Was the day the guy walked in, he said, well, you know, and he was one of those second generation people. He said, well, you know, as long as you keep on doing what you're doing, you're going to keep on getting what you're getting. So, yeah, I know I reap what I sow. I hate that part, but it's true.
Tradition 9. A relationship should avoid heated controversy. Each alcoholic has been an individual who, because of his alcoholism, could seldom control itself. One of the things that Dave and I try to avoid is heated controversy. And there's a lot of things that I've learned to do, and I'm kind of redundant with that, is that when I get so angry, and I think that's one of the things that both Dave and I have learned through the years about what we say and what we do, because you can forgive the act, but it's not always forgotten. And one of the things that we try to do is to talk it over first, maybe with somebody else, before I go and say it to Dave. And the women I work with, I try to say, if you've got issues with your husband, let's talk about it before, you know, you tear his head off with this. Because you do a little talking back and forth, it's amazing how much better it works. And Dave and I try to maintain our individuality. And sometime in doing that, I think my ideas are better. And one of the words that I have definitely had to learn in marriage, and it's a word that does not do well with alcoholics, and that word is compromise. Relationship is about compromise. And if I don't make concessions and compromise with my mate, I am not going to have a happy relationship. Because one of the things that I've also found out is when I always get what I want, what I find out a lot of times is I didn't want it anyway. So, checklist for tradition 9. Do I try to be the boss? Am I mature enough to understand and use the principles of AA in my relationship? If no one makes me do so with a sense of personal responsibility. And again, we've got to be good members of Alcoholics Anonymous, working on our own individual programs so that we bring that to this relationship. I don't know how, I've often said, I don't know how people have a relationship that don't practice these principles. I see all kinds of people go out and get married to people who know nothing about AA and Al-Anon. I find that, I don't know how they do that. And it might work out great. But the thing about it is I know that I need to uphold the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I don't believe that it's any mistake that I chose Dave and he chose me. I look at people who get married and they look like they have never had a problem in the world. And this man marries this alcoholic woman, and my first thing is what's wrong with him if he wants you? Obviously, there's something going on. There's alcoholism or something in his background. And 9 times out of 10, if that's not taken care of, it's going to affect the relationship. Do I exercise patience and humility in the things I do in my relationship? Way better at that one. Do I assume responsibility or I try to take on authority? I think Dave and I are really good about that today. Have I learned how and when to step aside gracefully when I begin to overstep my bounds? And I think Dave and I are both really good about that. And one of the things that I'm a member of Al-Anon as well, and one of the things that I try to remember is Dave is just, what Dave's doing is just not my business. And somebody will come up to me on Monday night, and Dave's been working a lot out of town lately, and I'll tell him that he's out of town, and all this, well, what's he doing about his meetings and stuff? What's he going to be doing if he's out of town so much? And I said, well, I don't know. You'll have to ask him. It's not my day to watch him. And he just needs to take care of his stuff. What he does is his responsibility. It is not my business. Who decides who does what in the day-to-day business of our relationship? That's something we do together. Am I a peace at any price person? I think probably both of us used to be. I think we're safer. It's amazing. I guess that what I feel like in my relationship today is I feel safe. I feel real safe to be able to express whatever. Doesn't this get to be expensive at times? I think it does, because if you stuff, you're going to resent. My AA sponsor always says whatever goes down, it's got to come up.
Number 10, we each are entitled to our own opinion on outside issues, hence our name ought never be drawn into public controversy. And that simply says that I carry around my opinion. I don't carry around our opinion. And I don't tell people how we feel about any given issue. Normally, you know, feeling like you have to drag your relationship into some kind of public controversy is a really bad idea. Because what happens is there's a lot of emotional damage that comes by that. And, you know, and the next time you get into a really heated argument with your mate, if you listen very carefully, if you just be quiet for a moment and listen very carefully, you can hear her mind snap shut. You've lost her. So we are very careful to, you know, make sure that we carry our own opinion around and don't try to speak for each other. We don't speak ill of each other in public. Okay, I don't say bad things about my wife in public. And she doesn't say bad things about me in public. And, you know, if we got a problem with each other, we need to deal with that in the privacy of our home. You start putting these public statements out there, and they kind of take on a life of their own. And the next thing you know, they just grow and grow and grow and can turn into a really critical problem. And, you know, if you don't believe that, look at all the tabloids, you know. So, you know, the bottom line is that love is an action. It's not a word, it's an action. And if you love someone, you treat them like you love them. Do you know who loves you? Of course you do. Your heart knows? Of course it knows. People who love you treat you like they love you. You know, you can't treat somebody one way and profess some other emotion. You know, you can't say I love you if you're treating somebody with hostility. So love is an action. The checklist is, do I give the impression that we have an opinion and am I its keeper? I don't think so. Am I careful to keep confidences given to me by my partner? Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of things that I find out about. Not only do I not violate any confidence that she gives me, but there's a lot of things I find out about and that she finds out about just by accident. We both sponsor people. Sometimes you can tell who's on the phone by just by the way the conversation is going. And sometimes I find out about things that about the women that Polly is sponsoring just because I'm in the house while she's talking on the phone to them. And I'm very, very careful and very sensitive to that information to make sure that I, first of all, don't tell anybody about it, and it never leaves our home. And I don't even try to engage Polly in conversation about it most of the time. If it's somebody that we jointly love and know, and it's more than just a sponsoring relationship, I may try to talk about if somebody having a problem, is Susie okay or whatever. But otherwise, I don't even try to engage her in conversation or find out about it any more than I know, because it's just not my business. Am I publicly critical of my mate? If so, what evidence can I offer to substantiate that I have sound judgment? Am I not a member of a recovery program? Where's my great judgment? I got a front row seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. What would my mate say if asked whether or not I loved her? She says it all the time, and she knows that I do. How important is it for me to be right? It used to be a matter of life or death. I mean, I may not always be right, but I am never wrong. I mean, that was my whole deal. And now, I don't care so much anymore. That's not anything I even worry about anymore. Can I let my partner disagree with my ideas without feeling rejected and without getting defensive? Pretty much, yeah. That comes from a lot of growth on my part and from, just the natural outcome of being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Number 11.
We individually convey our release and philosophy by attracting rather than promotion. Anonymity is personal and a valuable asset. And that's some of the stuff that I was talking about last night, that I think it's so important about how I conduct myself in this relationship, because I think that maybe we're the only relationship somebody is seeing, you know, and I want that relationship to be attractive. I want what we're doing to be an attraction. I don't want to be going out there and talking about my mate or having extracurricular marital affairs or doing the things that a lot of times people are doing. I want my relationship to be an attraction. And Dave and I have, we have worked hard with that. And one of the things that that I do with women that I sponsor is before you go, you've got to be committed to this relationship. Because I believe to be in a relationship is about big time commitment. And I really seen those values. So as an example of Alcoholics Anonymous, I talk about my relationship and what I do in my relationship. And anonymity is a personal and valuable asset. What I try to do when I'm talking about our relationship is I try to give you my view on what I'm talking about and then try not to say how they feel, because that was something I was really very bad at. I would give Dave's opinion on stuff as our opinion, and he would say, well, I don't necessarily agree with that. And what happens is I don't think that makes much of an attraction for a relationship. If I'm going around speaking for Dave, I don't think that's very much of an attraction. I hear women say all the time, such and such controls me. Well, that doesn't make marriage very attractive. And so what Dave and I try to do is we try to be autonomous in our relationship. And it's our relationship, but it's our individual opinions. Is my relationship treated with care in public? Absolutely. I don't believe, have you ever been around somebody who's having a big blow-up argument? I don't think I have never been so uncomfortable as when I get around somebody who's having a fight in front of me. I just want the floor to open up and me fall in it. So I try to be respectful of people. If Dave and I have something to say to each other, we try not for it to be with a lot of other people around. Not only because I think it's just a courtesy to other people. It makes people so uncomfortable. And at least I think it does, because it makes me, and I don't think I'm unique. Do I think my relationship is attractive to others, or does it appear shabby? Is my partner ever embarrassed or humiliated by my appearance or actions? And Dave and I try. I like to look nice for Dave. I like to do things that will make my partner happy. Do I give relationships a bad name? Am I guilty of promotion rather than attraction? And I think that, you know, I can talk all day long, but, you know, it's that old saying, your actions speak so loudly, I cannot hear a word you say. It's what we do. It's not what we say. Can I go about my affairs without giving my partner advice or how he or she should conduct theirs? And again, thank God for Al-Anon. What Dave does is just not my business. Can I do things for my relationship anonymously? Do I do good things in my relationship anonymously? And I think I do. I can do things, and I don't need for Dave to praise me for them. I do them because I just love to do them. And I think that's one of the wonderful things about Alcoholics Anonymous. I have an AA sponsor, and she talks all the time about, go do something nice for somebody, and if you get caught, it doesn't count. And so it's just go do something really nice and just not have to say anything. Can I give my partner the right to be wrong? Can I give my partner the right to be right? How do I feel when my partner criticizes the way I'm trying to live my recovery program? How do I feel when my partner criticizes me? That's when he has that tone. We don't do well when we're criticized. How can my partner's being in touch with reality help me? That always helps. Which do I give more of to my partner? Positive strokes or negative strokes? I certainly hope it's positive. What happens when my partner is in the relationship is getting noticeably better and the other is not? And I think that happens in all relationships, especially in recovery from time to time. Somebody seems like it's always, you know, just ahead of you a little bit, and the next time the other one's ahead of Dave and I've just learned, so well, it's just, we always talk about it. It's who is ever turning the barrel. Sometimes it's my turn in the barrel. Sometimes it's his turn in the barrel.
Number 12, selflessness is the spiritual foundation of our way of life as partners and mates, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. I used to think that meant placing my lofty principles before your contaminated, unwholesome personality. And now I've learned that it means placing AA principles before my contaminated, unwholesome personality. One of the greatest gifts or privileges that you can have as members of AA and Al-Anon is the opportunity to be of help to God's kids. There's just no place in our primary purpose for ego or pride or arrogance or selfishness or unwillingness. There's a lot of room for gratitude and humility, love, forgiveness, understanding. And it is such the essence of the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous is that we come here very contaminated people. And because of the way we're treated and because of the way we're loved, you know, it seems like, you know, that there's a statement that used to be made all the time, come in and let us love you until you can love yourself. That's nice, but that really doesn't quite get it. You know, that's really not quite what it's all about. come in and let us love you until you can learn to love other people. It is really nice to be loved. God, it feels good. But the true essence of God's greatest miracle is not to be loved, but to be able to love someone else. That's when you have true freedom. All of the things that we do to protect ourselves, sitting in judgment, being selfish and self-centered, these are all very negative things. And even though you look at someone else who is obvious, it's obvious to a moron even that they are screwing up, when you make that judgment on them, you are dealing in a very emotional, a very negative aspect of your personality. You're coming out really negative and you're dealing with the whole negative side of yourself. But if you could love that person and try to figure out how you could help them not do that anymore, or maybe be of a little help to them along the way so they don't have to be that way anymore, then that's when you know real freedom. That's what the essence of it is really all about. Let us love you until you can learn to love somebody else. So, Polly is my wife. How should Dave's wife be treated? You know, what would I like for an article in the Deseret News to say about me and the way I treat my wife? How should a good husband or mate act toward their partner? My son came to me one time and he says, "I'm having a lot of trouble. My two boys, Russ and James, they don't get along with each other all that well sometimes." And so when James had the first grandson, Russ says, "You know, I'm having a lot of trouble because I have a lot of trouble with James. And, you know, and I feel like I can't let that spill over into my relationship with Ryan, you know, but it's really hard for me. And, you know, and I don't know what to do. What do you think I should do?" And I said, "I think you should go somewhere and sit down and decide in your own mind what a good uncle should do for a newborn nephew. What should a good uncle do? Not what should Russ do about Ryan. Don't get it personal. What should a good uncle do to a newborn nephew? Whatever you decide that is, do that. If you try to make it anything else, you won't like it. And it won't work. So if you're not pleased with the answers to any of these things, you can ask yourself this: what can I do to change? That's pretty scary, but, you know, it's change or die for us. So, you know, nobody got here knowing how to be a good mate, a good partner, a good husband, or a good wife. We've all had to learn. Sometimes it's slow and painful, and sometimes it's not. But, you know, my answer is going back to the prayer I mentioned earlier from Cease Corrigan. You know, God, treat me tomorrow the way I treat my mate today. That's a good prayer to start with. Is there a spiritual foundation to my relationship? Absolutely. You bet. Have we had a spiritual awakening? Yes, we have. Do I place our common welfare first above everything but Alcoholics Anonymous? Without AA, I have no relationship. I have no ability to conduct a relationship. Do I treat my mate in a way that I'm proud of? Most of the time I do, yeah. Do I treat my mate one way in public and another in private? No, I don't. You know, and that's one of the hazards of having a Susie move in with you. Susie's only a couple of years sober when she moves in. Polly is her sponsor. Susie goes to our home group. She's going to live in our house. If there's any difference between the way Polly and I act in the privacy of our home and the way we are in public, Susie's going to spot it like that. And you know how these two-year-olds are. They're blabbermouths. They'll tell everybody everything. Is my relationship growing more healthy or getting sicker? Our relationship is growing more healthy all the time. So to conclude all this, let me just say that having a warm and loving relationship with another person is one of life's greatest achievements, and it's one of God's premium gifts. It contains all there is in great measure, if you let it. You know, we didn't talk about sex in this particular thing. We could have. But, you know, it's a lot of love and fun and sex and all the stuff that goes in a good relationship. And it's worth whatever trouble and tears it costs you 10 times over if you're willing to do a little work on it. Our ability to conduct a good relationship usually has to be learned. We're just not born knowing how to do it very well. And so we have found that being willing and working within the framework of Alcoholics Anonymous has given us the things that we need. What has it done? Well, it's first of all, the Program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know what that does. It teaches you to be unselfish and to overcome your character defects, to be willing to let God take those away from you. And secondly, it puts you in touch with people who are all going the same way you're going and who are glad for you to go along with them. And I am forever grateful that I have been found it within myself just to be willing to change. That's the key. And now, I'm going to give you one last joke. We're going to tell out of here. We're going to say the Lord's Prayer and get out of here. Okay? A Frenchman, an Englishman, and a New Yorker were captured by a fierce Indian tribe. And the chief said, "I have good news and bad news. The bad news is, we need a canoe, and we don't have any skins to make one, so we're going to use yours. The good news is, we're going to let you choose the way you die." So the Frenchman said, "I will take the poison." Chief hands him some poison. He drinks the poison, says, "Vive la France." Dies. And the Englishman says, "I'll take a pistol, mate." So he's given the pistol. He says, "God save the Queen." Pow! And he falls over dead. The New Yorker says, "I'll have a fork." The chief said, "A what?" He said, "A fork." So he hands this New Yorker a fork, and the New Yorker starts going like this. The guy's bleeding everywhere. His blood's squirting around. The chief says, "What the hell are you doing?" He says, "So much for your canoe, asshole." We love you all very much. Thank you for your patience. John, do you want to close this? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen. Keep coming back. It works. Well, I'm still Dave Pistol. I'm still an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 18, 1976. My home group is the Seal Beach Monday Night Speakers Meeting. And my sponsor's name is Frank Honeycutt. And my sponsor has a sponsor. And those are things I need to have. And pretty much have always had. They used to say in Texas when I got sober, if you don't give your sobriety date, you may not have one. And they're real big on it down there. And I have just come to identify myself that way. I'm really happy that we have some new people here tonight. You know, I wouldn't single you out or do anything to embarrass you for anything in the world, but we're just so glad you're here. And the reason we're glad you're here is because when we first came, there was somebody that was glad we were there. And without that, I don't know where we'd be. We always have a lot of good advice for newcomers. One of the things we do best is we welcome newcomers and tell them what they need to do. And we always tell them the same thing. You know, you need to get a book and read the book, and you need to go to a lot of meetings, and you need to get a sponsor. And we don't often tell them why they need to do that. We just tell them they need to. But the truth is that, when you go to an AA meeting, we have all kinds of meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous. We have speaker meetings and discussion meetings and big book studies and step studies and all that. And you get a lot of opinions in AA. If you go to the trouble to read the book, especially starting at the beginning. When I was brand new, there was a couple of guys that sort of took me under their wing, and I mean brand new. I was a few days sober. And so the guy named Little Dick and the guy named Bob. And Little Dick said, "Hey, Dave, have you got a big book?" And I said, "God, that's cute. You know, I'll bet you have a little book too, don't you?" There's just absolutely nothing quite as good as the outrageous arrogance of an alcoholic. And so I told him, "No, I didn't have a book." And you know, and he, Dick and Bob were just trying to help me. So they got a book, and then they got into this intellectual food fight over where I should start reading that book, whether I should start with chapter 3 or chapter 5. So we always recommend that you get a book. I recommend that you start on page I, and at least read through page 164. And the reason I recommend that is because if you read that, you'll know exactly what AA is all about, and that's not opinion. That's what's been the cornerstone of this leper colony for the past 63 years. If you go to a meeting, you can hear some opinions that may or may not square with what's in that book. I've never known anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous to intentionally lead anybody else the wrong way. But some of us can get some pretty strange ideas sometimes about what things are all about in here. So reading a book tells you for sure exactly what's going on. Going to a lot of meetings, let me tell you a little story. I have a, there's a guy now named Bobby. And I first heard Bobby talk in 1977 down on at 53rd South at the Alano Club. And it was one of the things I remember about that is that he had quit smoking, and he came down there and did a lot of his talk was about not smoking. And he was talking to a room full of people. I mean, this place was just, everybody was fired up. Couldn't even breathe in there. And he's up there telling everybody the evils of smoking. But I've known him for a long time, in other words. I met him in 1977, I still know him today. And he got kind of carried away, and he was giving talks for a while that were a little bit disrespectful, I thought, about Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was making references to those sacred 164 pages and so forth and so on. And we heard a tape that he had made recently. And he said he was grateful beyond his ability to describe that he made it back to Alcoholics Anonymous without either getting drunk or killing himself, because he just quit going to meetings that he wasn't talking at. And along the way, he decided he needed to do something about his ADD. So he went to an ADD place, and they prescribed some drugs for him to use to deal with his, I think, almost self-diagnosed condition. And the drugs didn't seem to be helping, so they gave him stronger drugs, and he started having some bad side effects, so they were giving him some other drugs to counteract the side effects of those drugs, and he just got weirder and weirder and weirder. And his talk, the latest tape I heard from him, was how grateful he was to have made it back to Alcoholics Anonymous before he killed himself or got drunk. And, you know, what he said next had a very profound effect on me. He said, "You know, if I'd been going to meetings, this would have never happened to me. My buddies, my peer groups, group,